Good evening. Come on. Anybody need a book for our class that we're going to be doing? Genesis? I see. You guys might have to share it now. I think we might have some more. I don't know where they're at, but we'll try to find some more. Well, good to see you guys on this beautiful evening. I didn't see anybody sunbathing on my street today. We got a few people coming in. We'll give them just a second. Comfort Carmu had her baby today.
Oh, really?
7:07 a.m. in the morning, 7 pounds, 0.8 ounces. Do the math. 20 inches long. They're at Covenant. Visiting hours are over at 7, so you're out of luck for today. Hopefully get to come home tomorrow.
Boy or girl?
Boy. Oh, yeah. Name. Yeah. I asked the same question. I had to call back because I just wrote the name down. I called back and I said, boy or girl? Dumei. D-U-M-E-I. Yeah. So, we got a new member. The rest of you guys need to get busy. Glad y'all recognize the humor. Actually, that could really be taken out of context. So, everybody having a good week?
Except for the cold and snow.
Yeah.
Hey, tomorrow's going to get more snow.
No.
5 to 8 inches, unless you live in Waverly, 12, 13. Okay, we're going to start into the book of Genesis. So if you want to turn your Bibles to the book of Genesis, you'll be in the right place. About 12 different things to keep square here. If you happen to take time to look at this booklet, if you had it, got some pretty good information in here, introductory information. I won't spend a lot of time with that, but the book Genesis was not the original name of the book. Anybody know where the name Genesis come from? You know, when the Hebrew Bible was rewritten in Greek, it was called the Septuagint. The Septuagint named it Genesis. Okay, but the original name of Genesis was following Hebrew tradition of naming it after the first few words of the book. Simply, in the beginning. That's the name of the first book, okay? Now, the first book of the Bible is part of a collection, okay? Part of a collection. The first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, are all part of the same work, okay? If you're reading modern literature, it can have a couple of different things that it's called, depending on what it's talking about. If it's called the Pentateuch, what would that be referring to? Have you heard of the Pentagon? And what does that mean? It has five sides, five books. So if I call it the Pentateuch, I'm referring to the collection of the first five books. But if I call it the Torah, what am I talking about? The law. All right. So it kind of depends on what I call it. I mean, if you're reading, I'm just going to call it what I call it, but if you're reading, that way you'll understand the things you're looking at when you read about the early writings. Moses, the uncontested author, uncontested as far as anybody that's sane, I think. I can't say uncontested because there's always somebody. You know what I'm saying? Now, 99.9% of scholars think it's Moses.
I was just going to mention that we actually met an individual that was ministering at a church in Algona that said point blank he did not believe Moses wrote the book.
Well,
how was his reasoning?
He had kind of a different view of different things, including whether Adam and Eve actually existed or not.
Well,
that was a big red flag for us.
Pretty much the nail in the coffin in John chapter 7, Jesus says, has not Moses given you the law? So, I mean, he kind of attributed. Now, was it all written by Moses? It kind of be hard for Moses to write about him dying and being buried, so there's a little bit of speculation as to that end, but we won't spend a lot of time on that. The time of writing, they say here 1446 to 1406 B.C. I have no objection to that. I have no scholarly anything to lead me in any other direction. I'm not a date expert. The structure and contents, an interesting thing here, and I want to bring this up because this is going to provide you with a little bit of challenge. This has challenged me through the years, probably challenged yourself as well. There's a recurring phrase throughout the book of Genesis, and it is, this is the account of, okay? You'll find that said over and over throughout the book of Genesis. Different people view that in different ways. Some people think that that is a beginning of a summation regarding what you just read, while other people tend to think, and I'm kind of in this other category, I think that the beginning of Genesis is a prologue, and then it goes and talks about it more in detail as it goes on. Now, you'll have to give consideration to that and see where you come down. I'll show you a little bit of evidence of that, at least in my thinking, but I'm not concreted in so tightly I couldn't be straightened out if need be. They say that there's two different sections in Genesis, chapters 1 through 11 being the time from the creation to the time of Abraham, and then that would just leave you with the time of Abraham to, let's see, the very end of Genesis would be the house of Jacob, right? Joseph. So they declare a natural division in the book. I'm not sure that I mean, you could divide it in a lot of ways. I'm not sure that's real helpful, but anyway. So, let's get started. Somebody just launch out there and read Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1 with great boldness so we can hear your voice. You can raise your hand if you want to get in line. Thank you, brother.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, I want you to think about that statement. There's a whole lot that we're going to talk about in just a little bit of discussion. Brother Ron Burke, which I think he's going to be listening to this, we're taping it, he is going to come back and talk about this very first part of Genesis in detail. He's done a whole lot of work. I'm going to kind of hit the highlights, okay? So, what is not said in that first verse? Do you ever do that? You want to know what it says, but by doing that, you want to isolate what it doesn't say. What does it not say? It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The author of the book makes an interesting note, and I really like it. He says, you know what? The Genesis account begins, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It does not attempt to justify God or explain or prove in any way. It just merely assumes that you know that there is a God. Did you catch hold of that? Now, we spend some time talking about how we know there's God, and those are all okay. But as far as the text is written, it doesn't do that. Is that interesting to you? Kind of interests me a little bit.
I've heard someone just narrate that they went only as far as to say, in the beginning, God. Where they ended it.
And you know what? I like to say it that way. Just to start and not finish it all, but just isolate, in the beginning, God. Makes a big point, doesn't it? Right.
I think that point is also further emphasized in John 1, verse 1. In the beginning was the Word.
The Word was with God.
And
the Word
no was part God. Of creation happened without the Word.
In the beginning, I'm getting the other beginning. I almost went to the wrong place. This took my mind right to Romans chapter 1 and verse 20, where it says that all men may know by the creation, basically, that God exists. You can look around and you can see, so that all men are without excuse, right? Really, God doesn't have to prove that He's there. How do we do it in the American court system? Do you have to prove that you're innocent?
Not supposed to.
No, somebody has to prove you're guilty, right? If you want to look at God, you can just look around at the stars, at the trees, and all that, and know. That's what God tries to communicate to us. And here He starts out and He says, simply, in the beginning, there was God. The word for God here is an interesting word. Anybody know what the word for God is in this passage? What? Now that you said it, I can't say it. Elohim. Elohim. Elohim, the first part of that word is E-L. El. That's one of God's names. That is one of the most generic of names for God, not to place any less significance on the word, because it talks about His majesty and His power. But when you put the Elohim on the end of it, you know what that points to? It makes it plural. We don't have a discussion about that. In the beginning was plural God. Yep. Well, somebody's got a comment on this.
Well, my note says that Elohim is plural, but the verb is singular. A normal usage in the Old Testament when reference is to the one true God. This use of the plural expresses intensification rather than number. It has been called the plural of majesty or of potentiality.
And that is a matter of opinion by the commentator.
I can
help show you why. Because as we continue through the first few chapters, you're going to see God say that He made man if you messed up there at first, you'd surely catch yourself on the second spot. God being plural, Candace, tell me about that.
Well, Christ is God and He was there too.
Christ was God and He was there too? I'll give you an A+. So there's two people,
three.
Three?
First
Who's this other person?
Spirit.
Oh, so you got God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit forming the we. Well, now what about this verse over here? I dug it up just to be a little bit cantankerous. Y'all have to appreciate that, I would think. 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 5 says that our God is one God. You just give me three. That was a good answer. Carol just said, yep.
I used this to describe this concept downstairs when I was teaching the class. I think it makes a good point. If you make a pie, no matter what kind of pie, I guess I'll go with coconut cream because that's my favorite. You cut that pie up into three pieces. Just because you remove one piece of that pie doesn't mean that that piece is still part of that pie. You divided it into three parts, but it's still the same pie. That's exactly what I think of God, is there are one part, but there are three sections.
To address the first part, I usually divide my pie in three pieces too. I'm not going to comment on that. That's good enough for me. I don't fully understand. I understand that God is one God, and somehow there's three parts of Him. It's the best I can do. If you can do better, we'd be glad to hear it.
Well, Dan, you are a son, you are a father, and you are a husband, but you are one.
That's true. That's and I really like that too. There's three distinct parts of me, probably more than that even, really. Ornery, pretty. Oh, okay. I kind of got off track there. So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, this author really come up with some interesting stuff. I went back in my notes from school and I didn't find this much interesting stuff. So if you have your books, you ought to kind of read your books a little bit because it's got some good stuff. The heavens and the earth. Hebrew writers used to use extremes to define a point. The highest thing you can imagine is the heavens, and down here is the earth. When he says he created the heavens and the earth, in Hebrew type writing, the meaning is he created everything. And we can understand that, right? And he used that type of language in other places, such as... Psalms 139 verse 2, where he says, "You know when I sit down and when I rise up." The meaning is that God knew everything about David. So you understand that's a Hebrew form of explaining the whole. So right here in the beginning, God says, "Look, I have created everything." Now I want you to wrap your mind around that. What does everything not include?
Nothing.
Say it again.
Nothing.
God made everything. It was all created in the beginning, right? So when we think about the things that are created, they're all made by God. Okay? Okay. Now at some point I'm jumping in. I've got three different books and notes of where I'm going, so I gotta... We're not going to talk about... Okay. Let's continue verse 2. "Now the earth was formless and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters." Have any thoughts about that? Oh, Tahira just come in. Carmo's had their baby today. You're next. I thought it was funny too, Dolores.
What does it mean?
Dume, if I pronounce it right. The earth was formless and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. Any thought as to why, here at the beginning, the earth was formless? Any thought about why it was formless?
Didn't exist.
Well, something existed that was formless, right?
I mean,
when he's... Hold on. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. So
energy and matter at that time. And then he formed it into what he wanted it to be.
I kind of picture it as being like clay.
Some other folks have thought that the following verse, talking about the water and stuff, kind of relates to the fact that it was formless. Because it says, even in this verse, that the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the deep. Let me ask you a really good question. And it'll only be good if we get a good answer, right? What was the Spirit of God doing hovering over the water? Maybe he was planning his strategy. Any other thoughts? Huh? Don't think it matters? Well, that's definitely a thought too. 2 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 6 says that the Spirit gives life. Did you catch that? I think if the only thing that matters there is the Spirit's on the scene because life is fixing to be established. But as Candace said, it's not just the Spirit that's there. Jesus is there too. That's pretty. You know, we forget that. Do you forget that?
No.
I think there's a tendency sometimes that we forget. So Jesus was there. Okay. Now, let's see. Okay, before we do, I want to do this.
Now,
yes.
Since I said no, I feel guilty.
Okay.
I want the answer to be yes.
Oh, no.
Without forgetting that Jesus was there.
No, that's your personal, yeah. No, say the truth.
That is not something that we would know explicitly from Scripture, from reading the first part of Genesis alone. We would know about the Father, we would know about the Spirit, but it's the New Testament which fills in the rest of the story.
Yes.
John chapter 1, Colossians chapter 1 in particular, and Hebrews also addresses the matter. So there are things which are going on in the spiritual realm, in the relationship that the Lord has, you know, with Himself and with the other spiritual beings, and it's not all fleshed out right away from the beginning. Why it isn't, I can't say.
And that's the only reason that I know Jesus was there in the beginning, because the New Testament tells me that. Very true. But nevertheless, the New Testament says it. It was right. So that's a good point. Now before we get started in reading the creation, I want to read to you some of the things that my instructor at school made a point of, which I thought was pretty good. About the beginning. He says the fact that creation happened and the way it happened refutes some erroneous thinking in this world. And he goes through a few, and I just want to read some of them to you. And I'm not going to get too deep into this because it would eat up our whole class, and Brother Ron is going to come back and talk about it. But I want to mention some of these things in a short way. First of all, the creation refutes the eternity of matter. The fact that elements have always existed and all that. It refutes polytheism. It says simply that God created. It does not say gods, even though it uses the word Elohim, which is plural. It doesn't point to more than one God, so it refutes polytheism. It also refutes agnosticism. Anybody know what an agnostic is?
They don't believe there's enough evidence to verify that God exists.
That's pretty much right on. They don't believe that there's enough knowledge given one way or the other to make an informed decision, basically. The creation refutes that because God created everything. It refutes, now I've not heard of this one until I read this, it refutes fatalism. Fatalism denies the providential rule of God in the world. Fatalism believes that things happen as a result of fate. Okay? Now, do you see any of that? We may not use that term, but do you see that in any of our society today? That's just fate, there's nothing I could do about it, type of thinking. It also refutes pantheism, which says that all things are God, and God is in all things. I hadn't heard of that one. Has anybody heard of the pantheism? I mean, I've heard the word, but I don't guess I connected with the...
Very much in line with Hindu thinking.
I'm not familiar with that, so it's in line with Hindu thinking, Travis says. Number six, it refutes evolution. And Brother Ron is going to talk to us extensively about that. The creation points to one thing in specific, when you look at it all together, it points to order, not to chaos, or not to happenstance. I don't even know if that's really a word, but I like it.
Happenstance.
Is that a word? So,
yes,
huh? So, we see that the beginning was an ordered beginning. It was a structured beginning. And wouldn't that be right as far as God's concerned? God doesn't throw anything to the wind, does he? Throw it up in the air and wherever it falls down, that's what happens. God's approach is never that way. And we're going to see that here as we read through this. What I'd like to do now is read, and you can help me with this, chapter 1, verse 3 through chapter 2, verse 3. So I need volunteers to read. And here's what we're going to do. I don't know if your Bible's broken down like this. In this first section, how many people have the NIV? Okay. If you look in the NIV, verse 3, verse 6, verse 9, verse 14, verse 20, verse 24, they all start out the same way. Well, whether you got the NIV or not, they all start out the same way. What's it say? And God said, right? Starting the mark of a new day, he says, and God said. So that's kind of an earmarker for us. So someone take off and read for a bit. Go ahead. Then when you get done, the next person will step right up.
They'll be... keep going.
Well, keep going. Whatever you want to do.
And God said, let there be light. And there was light. God saw that the light was good. He separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, let there be an expanse between the waters to separate water from water. So God made the expanse and separated the water under the expanse from the water above it. And it was so. God called the expanse sky. And there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. And God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear. And it was so. God called the dry ground land, and the gathered waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their various kinds. And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good, and there was evening, and there was morning, the third day.
Okay, stop right there for a second. Now, there are folks that see a natural division in the days of creation, and I'm going to show you that and see what you think about it, okay? What we're not going to talk about, that Ron is going to talk about, is how long the days of creation were. Was there a gap between them? All that. Ron's territory. He's going to go there. But let's do the first three. What was created on the first day?
Light.
Day and night. Okay. What was created on the second day? The sky. And
night.
And what?
Night.
Night?
Morning and evening.
That was the first day.
That was the first day. You're on the wrong day.
Oh.
Verse 6.
Okay.
I was going to say, man, they mowed it on me. Sky and waters, right? Did you get that?
Did the waters already exist? Going back to verse 2.
Let there be an expanse between the waters to separate the water from the water. You're right. So it's the sky and the atmosphere between the sky and the waters. Okay.
Yeah, if I help, we think of the creation as something more than just materialization.
Well, brother, that's what we're creating, material here. If you get to the fourth day, then you might, I think I know kind of where you're going, but I could be wrong. Jump in and try. Huh?
I think you're wrong. All I'm saying is, if you think of creation just as what he did on a certain day would be only what he materialized out of nothing, there's more to the creation than that. There's the formation, the setting of order, the organization. The materialization of the waters came earlier. But the organization, the separation, and other types of forming, you know, progressed after that.
Okay, let me ask you a question. On day one, was light created?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what it says.
On day two, what was created?
Sky.
These are physical things. Are they going to end up in a spiritual realm? Yes. But they're physical. So I don't... You'll have to clue me in further.
And he was just talking about the fact that, like, you were talking about the waters were there, but there's... Now he's got organization to the waters. You know, we've got clouds, we've got water, we've got now a heaven. And there's not just... that they've come in and they've come jumbled, but now we are actually organized.
Oh, yeah.
I'm taking it to the ethereal plane there.
Yeah. Okay. Hold up. That was kind of, yeah. Give me just a few more seconds, and I think what you're talking about is going to kind of check it out and see, okay? I believe.
He's already doing that already. He's already doing that already. He's already organizing all this the second day. The first.
Yeah. Well,
you know, I ain't
got there yet. I'm working on it.
The only reason I said anything is because you put waters up, and someone said, "Well, weren't the waters already there?" And I just said, "We think of the creation as more than just materialization."
Gotcha.
Materialization comes a little up.
So here we go on the third one. All was created on the third day.
Land and sea.
Land and sea. And you said plants, vegetation. What do all these three things kind of have in common?
Basic elements of life.
Basic elements, matter. Are these things going to go to heaven? Are these things that exist in the spiritual realm?
They're shadows.
It could be a shadow, certainly.
There's something that reproduces. Like your plants, they're going to reproduce.
Now, I brought that up to show you this. The first three are more material. Now, I remember, I'm presenting to you an idea of a scholar who throws this thing out on the table. So I'm not necessarily saying I buy into it, but it's got some pretty good things to think about. Let's look at the second 3 days and see what happens and see if there's any correlation to the first three, okay? So who wants to read verse 14? Who wants to read verse 14? I mean that block of information. Go ahead.
Then God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. God made the two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He made the stars also. God placed it within the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, and to govern the day and the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. So there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day.
Okay, hold up. So what was created on the fourth day?
The sun, moon, and
stars.
Sun, moon, and stars. Okay? Now, verse 20, the fifth day. Verse 20 through 23. Who wants
to
go ahead?
So God said, "Let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth in the open expanse of the heavens. God created the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves, the fish, the water, swarm after their kind, and every winged bird after its kind. God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, 'Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth.' And there was evening and there was morning."
So what did he create on the fifth day?
Birds.
Fish and birds. The DNR would be happy, right? Is that who regulates the... Am I using right Iowa talk?
Yeah.
It's not the same as Oklahoma talk. I'd have to say the Oklahoma Fish and Wildlife, whatever. Yeah. Sorry, y'all didn't even know that, did you? Now, who wants to read verse 24 through 26, is it?
"And God said, 'Let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creatures that move along the ground, and wild animals, each according to its kind.' And it was good, and it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, 'Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, and over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground.' So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them."
Yeah, you got to go on down through.
God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground. Then God said, I gave you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit and seed in it. They will be yours forever. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the air and all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give with every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw that all he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day.
So what got made on the sixth day?
Animals.
And humans, right? Now, look at the direct correlation here and see what you think. When I mapped them out this way, day one could correlate to day four because light was created day and night, but on the fourth day, the sun, moon, the stars. Then you've got the skies and the water that separates this being hooked up with fish and birds. Then on the third day, I can't even read what that says.
Land.
Oh, man. Need to work on that. Land and sea and plants, and here you have animals and humans. Anybody ever seen that before, and what do you think about it? I mean, just, I thought it was interesting.
Is there a point?
Now, that's what I'm asking you.
I know, it's an idea of a correlation, but is there a point to the scholars presenting this? Is there some meaning behind it?
Well, just,
or is it just a nifty little thing?
Kind of a little bit to what you were pointing to earlier, okay? These first things kind of are in relation to matter, and these things are more in relationship to life, is what the guy said. Thought that a bit interesting. But when I looked a little bit closer, I saw something. Anybody notice anything kind of a little bit interesting here between 1 and 4?
What was the light before the sun?
That was a great question. Day 1, light was made. But the sun, the moon, and stars weren't created until the 4th day.
Was it a fog?
What's that? Even more marvelous than that.
You've been watching the History Channel.
The fact that plant life would exist,
right. That's interesting. Ooh, I like that too. Because plants need photosynthesis, right, to live. Okay, any speculation? Sarah C.B., you got any speculation on this? You just
thinking God's capable of anything, and if he wants it, wants there to be plants, God has done it. Do it.
I like that.
And it's the order, it's the light, it's the separating of the water from the land, the plants, and then the sun to help feed the plants to keep them growing. I mean, he had the perfect plan, because we know that. So it's just all, it's order, it's just plain order.
Order.
He could have, you know, he has just this light on the first day, but on the fourth day, it's like Travis is saying, he organized it. Okay, this light, this part portion of light is going to go over today, this portion of light is going to go over tonight.
You want me to throw in my speculation? For what it's worth, they were just speculation. I mean, not that we should even go there. What is God?
Light.
So when God shows up somewhere, you know, I just kind of thought about that. I thought, you know, God shows up on the scene, and there's light.
And what is he speaking into? Speaking himself into?
Oh, no. No, I'm with you there. No. That goes without saying.
Even when Moses went up to see God in the mountains to get the
being very bright.
Yeah.
And when the Moses went back down to the mountain to see people,
he had to wear a veil to cover up the, basically to cover, he wanted to cover up the fading of the radiance that he was affected by while he was there, to put it, I think, the way it is.
Well, Revelation says that when the new Jerusalem, the new heaven comes, the new earth, there will be no more sun because God will be the light.
Well, doesn't that, I mean, when you start thinking about this, but Carol, you know, but we could speculate. What time, is that what time it is? Yeah, that's right. Because if I'd done it, it'd take 60 million years. Man, I just looked back there and I thought, no, get out of town. Okay. So, Brother Engel is probably going to pick up. Well, we really need to start where I probably don't have much time, and that is the making of man. Okay? So, God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Now, Brother Engel may pick up here again, but we'll just go for a few minutes till the kids come up, and so we don't hold them over. God created... Now, interestingly enough, the first six things, except for humans, not including humans, these all these things were meant to serve man. To be there for man to use. He used the stars to navigate. The sun makes the plants grow. He eats the plants. Yada, yada, yada. And the man is supposed to, what?
Rule
over them. Take dominion over them. So the man is different from all the rest of creation, right? How were the plants, do you remember when we were reading a while ago, how were the plants reproduced?
Seeds.
By seeds after what?
Their own kind.
After their own kind. What does that mean?
An apple
seed won't grow a pear.
Right.
A chimpanzee and a donkey can't mate and form up a chimonkey.
And a monkey does not make a human.
Right. Even though it's what, one chromosome off or something,
yeah.
It ain't going to happen. That's just a prelude to Ron's discussion on evolution. But what does it mean here when the text says that man was created in God's own image?
If you were made after him.
Made it what?
After him.
Made after him?
In his kind.
Yes. Did you have... Okay. We're at the end of time. What a bummer. Would like for you to give some more thought about what it means to be made in the image of God. A whole lot of thinking can go on regarding that. I want you to give a little thought, maybe looking up in a dictionary, and we have dictionaries down here in the library. Get a chance, look something up like that and give it some thought, because it'll probably really add to our discussion. Thanks for coming.